You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, everyone. I'm Ahalya and you're catching me on another podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss macroeconomic topics, both global and domestic, as well as interesting and important. Relevance is key on our series. Joining us, as always, is Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Hi, Srijit. How are you doing?
Hi, Ahalya. I'm good. How are you doing?
Lovely, and really excited to dive into a very interesting conversation, Srijit. So just to set the context, everyone, you know, we've previously talked about monetary policy tightening in advanced economies like the US and the Euro area, and the impact that that tightening has on both domestic and global economies, right? But apart from all of this, there's also another important factor for global growth and something many analysts have looked forward to for 2023. It's nothing but the economic reopening from early this year in China, often called the factory of the world. With COVID cases and lockdowns in various cities impacting both supply and demand of goods and services, the reopening in China and the increase in domestic demand was expected to give an impetus to global growth. But today we're going to look at how this has actually fared so far, what the data suggests, and what could lie ahead as a result. Srijit, it's going to be a very all-encompassing sort of discussion. Yeah. Today. So I think let's start at the beginning. Sure. You know, obviously, post-pandemic is what we're focusing on, but let's also look at pre-pandemic, right? Give us a starting point. Can you tell us about the main growth and policy drivers before the pandemic actually broke out? And, you know, that'll give us a good idea of why we've come to where we are now.
Sure. So that's actually a good point in time to start. If you look at, say, the second half of 2019, so that's essentially months before the onset of the pandemic, growth in China was actually already slowing. One reason for this was the trade war with the US. There were tariff hikes by the US on imports from China, retaliation by China, and then multiple rounds of negotiations. This slowed China's export growth, manufacturing outlook, and even Asia exports. Mm-hmm. The other factor was the economic deleveraging or de-risking, if you want to call it that, which is, you know, keeping money supply and credit under control, particularly to the property sector there, which was over-leveraged. This impacted fiscal revenue as income from land sales to the property sector is a major portion. Right. Now, all these factors reflected in GDP growth, which had started to slow. And even the central bank had acknowledged downward pressure on the economy, you know, in late 2019. But policy support or easing was quite targeted. For example, banks' reserve requirement ratio was cut by 50 basis points in around September 2019. But there was no all-out policy easing, and even certain measures excluded the property sector to ensure the economic deleveraging does not, you know, go off track. Therefore, for policy, it was really a question of short-term growth support versus long-term financial stability. The impact of all this was felt on growth, which was slowing.
So that's actually quite counterintuitive, Srijit, because I think the idea for most of us is that, you know, it was a booming economy and then it just completely slowed down, right? But the idea that it was already slowing back then before the pandemic happened is definitely interesting. Now, I'm going to touch upon the property sector in a while, but for now, we know that there were strict lockdowns and restrictions in all of the places, you know, in China, which really impacted activity. Could you tell us a little bit more about the economic trajectory after the onset of the pandemic? So this is like early pandemic 2020, right, when it just broke out. What was the growth like then? What were the main drivers and what were the key measures which actually marked that period?
Sure. One, we know there were multiple rounds of COVID infections from different variants and, you know, phases in between when growth actually seemed to slowly recover. China's lockdown was actually stringent. It's called the zero COVID strategy, which curtailed production and also impacted activity in general, you know, private consumption and so on. Two, during this, there were floods in 2020, which further constrained production and consumption. So this impacted port activity, for example, and so the global supply chain congestion during the pandemic, that of container shortages, semiconductor shortages, and so on, if you remember, was actually worsened. So consumer demand stayed weak. For example, retail sales stayed well below the pre-pandemic levels. China, in fact, also dropped its annual GDP growth target. The policy response here again was quite interesting. Like I said, China was already dealing with structurally high leverage, and so it didn't want to go for outright heavy monetary policy easing. Therefore, it stuck to its strategies of economic deleveraging and internal focus. By that I mean the focus not just on trade, but also domestic drivers, and even within domestic, you know, away from concentration in the property sector, which is overleveraged, like I said. Thus, while it did implement several measures to support the economy in the short term, like injecting liquidity, FX purchases, supporting bank lending to small businesses, multiple cuts to the reserve requirement ratio of banks and the loan prime rate. But it ensured the focus on its strategic policies continued. So it continued to keep policies for the property sector tight based on its structural view that, you know, housing is for living and not for speculation. So if you see, for example, it stuck to its policy called three red lines, which is to curb speculation in real estate activity. And that policy actually meant only those companies which keep certain ratios. I mean, three ratios, in fact, of liabilities to assets, net debt to equity, cash to short-term debt. So if you take these three ratios and if it is within the threshold, only then it would get permission to increase the debt in the next year. Similarly, it hiked mortgage rates in Shanghai in 2021. And the overall narrative from policymakers also also suggested less one-sided focus on short-term growth and therefore no sudden or sharp changes in strategy.
Okay, so just before you carry on, if I could just interrupt, there was this whole, you know, worry about default by a property developer and the economic impact that that could have in the context of what you just mentioned about the tightening of the property sector. Like we said, we need to touch upon that. How did that play out and how is the property sector doing right now?
You're right. In late 2021, a major Chinese property developer defaulted on its debt payment. And before that, there was this whole period of uncertainty. So this was seen really as a reflection of all the problems faced by China's property sector, which is actually a very major part of the economy. So if you see, one, the property sector has a direct share of around 11% in China's GDP. And if we add up all the related upstream and downstream sectors linked to the property sector, the whole share becomes around 30%. Housing is also the most important part of household assets because home ownership is really high. And real estate investment accounts for a good portion of fixed asset investments in China.
Right.
In fact, it's also linked to the, you know, financial sector through its share of loans, you know, property development loans, mortgage loans, or even through loans which have property as collateral. I mean, if I go even further, you could, you know, a major source of revenue for local governments there is also from the sale of land to developers.
Okay.
So what I'm essentially trying to say is that the property sector is very closely linked to China's economy.
Right.
Now, apart from the issues specific to the developer in question there, questions were therefore raised about financing through China's offshore bond market, particularly the high yield market there, where real estate has a major weight. The impact this would have on project completions, which are already strained, property prices which are already falling, and you know, therefore the nature of policy response, all this could evoke.
Right.
And in fact, another event I would like to mention, which happened around the same time in 2021, was the power crunch. So due to coal shortage and the anti-pollution campaign that China endorsed, which was to reach, you know, peak carbon dioxide emissions before 2030 and carbon neutrality, I think, by 2060, local governments adopted very aggressive measures which reduced production by energy-intensive sectors. So the economy was thus facing strong downward pressure from various fronts. So policy therefore started to ease a bit actually from late 2021. In the property sector, if you see, minimum mortgage rate for the first time home buyers were cut to, I think, 20 basis points below the loan prime rate. And the five-year loan prime rate itself was cut by 15 basis points.
Okay.
And later in 2022, tax rebates were announced and, you know, several measures. I mean, these were very important. And I think around 16 measures were announced to support property sector financing finally. Very importantly, I think China also downgraded the stringency of its COVID management measures, you know, essentially giving up a zero COVID strategy. This was really expected to be an inflection point for China's recovery.
Okay, so that's really interesting. I think some very key moments, you know, over the past couple of years that have impacted the economy there. And that's pretty much how the pandemic period played out in terms of, you know, those key events and also, you know, China's policy response, right? But it also abandoned its zero COVID policy and adopted measures to support the property sector. So coming to the here and now, it's been almost 6 months since China officially reopened, so to say. Mm-hmm. But how has that recovery fared? Has it met, exceeded, or fallen short of expectations? I think that's interesting to look at because, like I said, you know, the common perception is that, oh, it was booming and then it was actually slowing down. So, you know, is there more that meets the eye?
Yeah, so China reopened its economy in January this year. There were expectations of a pretty strong pent-up demand, you know, support for global growth, which is slowing, support for commodity prices and so on. But the data so far suggests otherwise. So most of it has been below expectation, although the year-on-year numbers seem high because of lockdowns in Shanghai this time last year. Now, but if you actually see the sequential momentum of data, recent data prints on credit, fixed asset investments, industrial value addition, retail sales, you know, trade, exports and imports were all short of expectation. The other noteworthy aspect is also the muted growth in prices of commodities. You take iron ore, copper, you know, the metals and raw industrials basket as a whole. The growth there has also been quite muted. China LGP number, I think it came at around 4.5% year on year, was, if you see the internals, it was driven more by services than manufacturing. So this essentially means pent-up demand there has been spent more on non-tradable services than tradable goods, you know, as people have been traveling and eating out after a very long time, right? So this shows in the data on domestic travel also, for example. So the impulse for global growth from, you know, trade because of China reopening has been low. And this, in fact, also reflects in the recent HIX China export growth numbers as well. So overall recovery, if you see, has been weaker than expected and services have fared better than manufacturing.
Okay, so a milder than expected recovery, you know, in terms of the China economy reopening. I think the important question, if we take that a step further, is what lies ahead? We've taken a look at, you know, pre-pandemic, during pandemic, now. So given all of this data, given all of these observations, what lies ahead for the Chinese economy?
So China has set an official target, the growth target, that is, of
around 5%
for this year, 2023. There are quite a few headwinds and some tailwinds to this. So one, we discuss about the property sector. So how it faced serious issues in China, finally, you know, adopting measures to support the sector late last year. Yeah. As of now, the situation, if you see, is at best not incrementally worsening as it was a year or two ago. But data here, like housing starts and floor space under construction, is still quite weak. One main reason is that support measures have focused more on supply, like we discussed, developer financing and so on, and less on addressing consumer demand. So consumer demand has been weak right from before the pandemic, and this has not had any, you know, major growth drivers so far. And the reason for that, if you see, you know, government stimulus for households was much lower in China than, say, in the US, where around 25% of GDP was the overall fiscal stimulus. The damage to household balance sheets was likely higher in China. And there could also be a potential skew in, you know, savings towards higher income households versus lower income households. Add to all this the hit to household wealth from the fall in property prices and the outlook on income growth, which is, again, not very strong. Consumer demand is not fully looking up yet. So the good part, however, if you know, we've actually discussed about all the headwinds. But one good part is, unlike the rest of the world, China currently does not have a high inflation problem. So consumer price inflation, you know, if you look at the recent prints, have been very benign. And so this is really not a constraint for policy. So that's a good sign. But again, in the medium term, if you see, there could be, again, a few other headwinds, like, you know, the China plus one strategy, where businesses diversify supply chains from outside China and not concentrate on China alone. And, you know, demographic issues in China. So this is how it could, you know, these are the factors in the medium term. But yeah, you have quite a few headwinds there.
Again, you know, the fact that consumer demand is not high post-pandemic, very counterintuitive, very surprising. And we've covered quite a bit on China throughout this discussion, you know, its growth drivers and policy choices over the last 5 years. But I would also like to just sort of end today's conversation with three takeaways, three key takeaways, Srijit. You know, for the benefit of our listeners, what would you say those are? And because it's really important to understand how one of the biggest players in the global economy is going to impact, you know, the rest of the world today.
Sure, I think that's a good way to summarize. So one, China was already slowing pre-pandemic due to the trade war and economic deleveraging. The pandemic, property sector issues and power crunch, like we discussed, added to all this. policy response, meanwhile, never really went all out to support growth and has been measured and targeted. So that's one. Two, the recovery this year after reopening has therefore been lackluster. And the key point here really is the continuing weakness in consumer demand. Mm-hmm. Three, looking ahead, this means recovery could be gradual as consumer demand and confidence rebuild alongside a slow recovery in the property sector and also slowing global growth. So this finally raises the question on the nature of policy response from China. So will China revert to its tried and tested practice of increasing infrastructure investment to support growth? Mm-hmm. Or will it this time stick to a more balanced and targeted, nuanced approach? Either way, consumer demand may need to be addressed. I think that's how I would conclude. Yeah,
I think that last point is probably the biggest observation that's come through from today's discussion, because like I said, very surprising that consumer demand hasn't increased, right? Thank you so much, Srijit, for just giving us those insights into the economy today. It's been really great catching up with you on this edition of Let's Talk Macro, and I'm sure we'll bring another interesting conversation on the next one.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening in. Until next time, stay safe, stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.